98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf react to yesterday's D-backs game. D-backs Daily. Brought to you by America Roofing. Honored to protect your family as the number one roofer in Arizona. Online at AmericaRoofingCo.com.
So, interesting situation. Cole Calhoun moves up to second in the batting order. Granted, he went 0 for 5, but he saw about 22 pitches in those five at-bats. So he stretched it out in the first inning. Starling Marte earns a walk. So with two outs, Escobar gets a hit, and the great base running this time of making sure you move up to third, bad throw. So therefore, Escobar's at second, runners on second and third. Christian Walker
making his first start as a Ranger. The pitch and a ground ball down to third should be easy. Across Kinder, Falefa throws it away. Off the glove of Frazier. Two runs are going to score. And into second base goes Walker. Well, there's a gift. The Diamondbacks will surely take that.
Now, I got to say, Greg Schulte, that's a pretty good job to be able to hammer out. Kinder Falefa throws it away.
Yes.
And into second base goes Walker. Well,
that's pretty good.
Yes, no doubt. And the Diamondbacks actually made Gibson work.
Yes.
Patient at the plate. 78 pitches after four innings, 93 after five.
Tacking on insurance after you get the two runs there in the first inning, but there's still two outs, but you've got another runner in scoring position, David Peralta.
Here's the pitch to Peralta, and a shot to center, and that ball will sink for a base hit. Walker turns third. He's coming to the plate. The score is offline. He scores. An RBI single for David Peralta, and it's 3-0 D-backs.
Boy, do they need that. Well, yes. Done, David Peralta. Let's hope he gets going.
Think about the juxtaposition there. 33 pitches they forced Gibson to throw, as you mentioned. Then Merrill Kelly comes in and plus two strikeouts, still gets through the first in only 12 pitches. And then later, when it's still sitting there at 3-0 for a long time, you don't expect to get this kind of production from the very bottom of the lineup. But in the top of the sixth inning, vote in the eight hole.
Merrill Kelly.
Here comes the 1-0
pitch. Oh, go ahead.
Merrill Kelly. Aloe vera on sunburned skin.
Christian Walker with a double. He gets balked over to third, and after a balk, you could tell that Jabot was not terribly focused.
Here comes the 1-0 pitch. Boat on a line drive right field, and that is down for a hit. His first is a Diamondback. He picks up Walker. And Vogt will go into second base with a stand-up double. It's 4-0 Diamondbacks. What a huge two-out hit for Stephen Vogt into the right field corner.
First hit by a catcher for the Diamondbacks.
Boy, he went down and got it, too. That was cool.
Absolutely. Now you got a no-no. Merrill Kelly pitching outstanding. He has a no-no through six. Comes out in the seventh. Strikes out Danny Santana. So 6 1/3 innings. No hit baseball.
And now is Odor. And oh. A shot. Hit to pretty deep right, and that ball is going to sail on out of here. So the no-hitter, the shutout gone, and the Rangers are on the board. It's 4-1 on Odor's first home run of the year.
I'm sorry, but you know what I'm laughing at already.
Ned Odor and the
Odor
punch.
Odor and Joey Bats.
But, man, speaking of Joey Gallo comes up next, gets him to fly out. And that was the thing about Merrill Kelly. You lost the no-no, you gave up the home run, and then he's still right in there to get a strikeout to end the seventh inning. And then in the eighth inning, he's able to go through most of that inning in the eighth inning, but he gave up two base hits in the eighth. You got a little nervous, and yet the manager says, don't worry. I'm going to let you stay in because I have a right-on-right matchup with Kiner Falefa, and that was kind of an impressive decision to leave him in the game for that at-bat.
Here's the pitch on the way, and a pop fly on the infield called for by Marte. He's got it two down.
That game, 7 2/3. Chafin comes in, gives up a full count to Shin-Soo Chu before he strikes him out to end the eighth, and then Archie Bradley strikes out the side to end it.
2-2 the count with two outs in the ninth. Bradley to Gallo, and he struck him out swinging. And this is a Diamondback victory tonight as they ride the arm of Merrill Kelly to a 4-1 victory over the Texas Rangers.
That is your D-backs Daily.
You've been listening to D-Backs Daily on the Doug and Wolf Show. Brought to you by America Roofing. Honored to protect your family as the number one roofer in Arizona. Online at AmericaRoofingCo.com.
That felt good. That felt like aloe vera.
Well, let me tell you, right, it really did, right? I mean, it was just exactly what the Diamondbacks needed right there. And it's interesting because of how it ended with Archie Bradley, of course. I don't know if I've ever seen Arch better when it comes to just lining up and throwing gas. But as we all know, at some point in time, you got to go ahead and develop another pitch. You got to get a second pitch. The curveball, we all understand he's got that. The change is what we're all waiting for. The change is what
I would love for him to
get
a change.
Waiting for right now, because there have been a lot of guys in the league that have had nothing but fastball change that have been great closers. Isn't that right, Trevor Hoffman?
There's a lot of people feel like the curveball is such a feel pitch that it's not a great second weapon for a closer, because you have less time in the bullpen to get ready to come out. So that's why a slider or a changeup is a lot easier for a pitcher to be able to execute without the work that a curveball might take at the bullpen. Not everybody subscribes to that theory, but some do. So I'm kind of with you. I'd like that other pitch. But one of the things I've noticed about Archie, and I don't think that I'm sure that there's no professional scouts that live in Phoenix, Arizona at all, so we don't have to worry about getting the word out. It seems to me Archie wants to blow people away early in a series and then have that in their mind and break off more curveballs later in the series. Let's kind of pay attention today to see if he throws a lot more curveballs, hopefully, if he has an opportunity to close the win. I got to tell you, my fascination with this game, have you noticed the kind of the movement and the mindset of Torrey Lovello? In the way he manages.
How so?
Think about the steps that he has gone through in the last couple days and how he's changing as a manager. That's going to come up at 7:30. Up next, Cliff Kingsbury had a lot of time on his hands. Kyler, D-Hop, the offense. How's it all going to come together? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. I don't like to give very many traffic updates here on the Doug and Wolf Show, simply because Wolf Bear and Maloney are in the Auction Community Studios. I'm here in Studio Wife on the west side, so all I could do is just look at Twitter, basically, or pay attention to a couple TV channels while I'm sitting here. So I don't know all the particulars, but if you don't mind a traffic update, if there's any way you can avoid the Tempe Town Lake area, Mill Avenue, the bridge, or any of that area, it might be a good thing to let emergency crews get through there. It appears the old railroad bridge had some kind of collapse or problem, and a train is on fire and went into the lake.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, the pictures that are coming through right now are just, wow. They just look crazy.
Oh, man.
So if you can stay away from that area, please do. That way emergency crews can do everything that they need to do and not have to worry about other people being around them. I realize it's 7:14 in the morning. That might be the exact time in your life where you're trying to get right around there. And you're thinking, wait, I got to get through there. Maybe find a different route, go the long way around, something like that. But just try to avoid the bridges in that area so all the emergency crews can get to where they need to go. It looks crazy right now.
Let's hope everyone's okay.
Oh, yeah, God bless them. Man. I'm kind of scared. It looks pictures are crazy. Cliff Kingsbury had a Zoom presser with the media yesterday. If you haven't read the protocols, and I can understand why would you? It's a little weird. Testing yesterday, and you can't come into the building. Testing today, and you can't come into the building. Self-quarantine at home tomorrow, so you're not supposed to even leave your house. Testing on Friday. If you have three negatives Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, you are now allowed in the building just to get your physical. Okay?
Just think about that.
That's what's going on for this. So this is when we say yesterday's the first day at camp. Well, it's the first day of the strangest camp we've ever had.
Yes.
In the coronavirus world that we're in right now. And Cliff Kingsbury was asked about the coronavirus world in a different way. And that is the fact that this is something you and I have talked about a lot. this is the first offseason in the history of Kyler Murray since probably 4 or 5 years old Kyler Murray that he isn't focused on something else.
Yeah.
He was the only human being, or still is, to ever be drafted in the top 10 in baseball and football.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows you the level of focus he had on baseball as soon as football was over. And Cliff Kingsbury said this is going to be a major benefit.
He's always kind of rolled right into another sport. And so to just be a football player, and that's his job and in his profession, obviously we would have liked to have him on the grass for some of the offseason training, but just staying in touch with him over the last few months, he's been working his tail off. It's been all football all the time, whether it's working out or throwing or studying film. And so I feel like he's still going to take some huge strides. I think you saw a lot of that progression towards the end of the season, and just speaking with him, his confidence level, his understanding of our system is night and day from where it was last year. And so we're really fired up to get him out there and try to take that next step this season.
This is going to be fascinating. It really is based on our needs, right? What is Kyler Murray? What kind of offense is he really going to be in? That's what I want to know right now. Is it going to be the air raid? Is that what it's going to be? Once an air raid coach, always an air raid coach. Isn't that right, Cliff? Is it going to be a lot of four wide receivers because you have the talent now? You have a DeAndre Hopkins, Larry Fitzgerald, Christian Kirk. You have guys that you like. Is it going to be 12 personnel? Is it going to be a lot of time? Is it going to be a mix of it all? What's it going to be? The good news is there's no defensive coordinator that has any idea as to what they're going to see in September. You look at the first four opponents for the Arizona Cardinals. I would say the first three in particular. I would not want to be a defensive coordinator with all of that talent the Arizona Cardinals have on the offensive side of the ball. You have no real idea as to what you're going to see. Now, maybe you're going to go back and you're going to look at December of last year. Maybe you're going to go back and you're going to look at November of last year. I don't know how you're going to parse it. I don't know how you're going to do it. I just know that the Arizona Cardinals, and Kyler Murray in particular, has a huge advantage.
It's really interesting you're saying that, because everything you look at last year, the defensive coordinator is looking at play at scheme and plays without DeAndre Hopkins, number one.
Yes.
And number two.
Is that a big, don't just gloss over that. Gloss over that. That's a big, big deal, Basinonians. Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah, we're going to look at this offense. They don't have DeAndre Hopkins like they do this year. And we're going to go into every game trying to take him away from Kyler Murray.
Remember what we've been talking about, or at least me. I don't know if you've really joined me, but I will always wonder – and I don't know if we'll ever get the answer, whether or not Cliff Kingsbury is still a 10-personnel coach and I just didn't have my personnel, and as soon as I get what I want, I'm back all in on the air raid, or if he's the guy that realizes air raid in moderation, always in moderation.
Always.
And you know what? Let me use the other personnel groups. Tight ends are my friend. Tight ends are the friend of a young quarterback. Trust my very experienced offensive line coach for running plays, things like that. And what adjustments he has personally made. And that's always been my question, but now I have a second question that'll never get answered too. He openly admitted that it was probably a mistake to try to be so vanilla in the 2019 preseason.
Yep.
Because understanding it's not about me showing you what I can do, it's about my players executing what I can do. And he should have spent more time in the preseason running their stuff, and they looked a little bit out of timing, out of rhythm in the month of September. Since he admitted that mistake, I'm dying to know whether or not we would have actually seen a lot of the things he wants to do with D-Hop in the preseason, because he admitted it was a mistake last year not to do it.
That's a great
point. That's exactly what point you're making, is what's it going to be like to be a defensive coordinator when you don't have any idea? If they can – I kind of think they're really going to run at a high tempo in practice in order to create game decisions, game feel, and everything except hitting Kyler, because you want to make sure you've got a better sense of timing that you didn't develop in last year's preseason.
Yeah, it's going to be the 49ers, of course, in week one, right? And the 49ers, that's a big advantage. They already know the talent, right? They already know the Arizona Cardinals and their offense from last year. They've seen it up close and personal, not once, but twice, right? They know all about DeAndre Hopkins. Yes, they can guess and project how they're going to use DeAndre Hopkins, but they don't know for sure. That's why it's a disadvantage right there. I think you'll see Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator for the 49ers, while you'll see Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers come out, and I think they're going to be very vanilla for the most part. They have to believe in their defense, believe in their talent, the skill that they have, right? Not only on the edge with Nick Bosa, but Richard Sherman as well. The skill they have, they're going to let that skill go play and figure out what the Arizona Cardinals are doing to them, what they're trying to do with DeAndre Hopkins. So that's going to be the first quarter of that game is going to be wildly exciting for an analyst to sit there and try to break it down like a defensive coordinator is. What are the Cardinals doing with DeAndre Hopkins? How are they using him? What kind of personnel groups are they using him in and down in distance? It's all of these factors that are going to be awesome to watch come September, Lord willing.
Cliff Kingsbury was asked kind of something along the lines of what you're talking about, Wolf. With you having all of this time in a coronavirus world, how many new plays did you draw up for DeAndre Hopkins? How crazy can this offense get?
It's tough when you have quarantine. You got a bunch of free time just to draw up crazy plays. So we're going to try to minimize that and just let DeAndre be the great player he is. We're going to have different things, different ways to try to get him the football, obviously. But we like the progress of this offense, kind of the direction it took late in the year. I feel like we kind of found our identity, and he's just going to be an added weapon that's just going to hopefully make us that much better moving forward.
I'm such a big fan of that answer because as important as coaching is, it's just as important for a coach to understand I need to outcoach the other guy when he has better talent. If I have better talent, get out of the talent's way. And that's kind of what he said there. Hey, yeah, it's tempting. We had a lot of time in that environment, but we need to just put DeAndre Hopkins in positions to let D-Hop go do those things. And it sounded exactly like that's the way Cliff Kingsbury feels.
Once again, Basin audience, listen, Cliff Kingsbury has a big brain, Ron Wolfley reporting, right? And he's also humble. I've talked about this before. It's a great way to go through life, Basin audience, to be smart and humble. And that's what Cliff Kingsbury is. He came in here. He wasn't dogmatic. He wasn't going to change the National Football League. He made adjustments as he knew he had to make adjustments, right? And because of that, I think Cliff Kingsbury is looking at the football universe and the expansion of the football universe and saying, wait a minute, why would I limit myself to air raid principles? Mm-hmm. Why would I limit myself to 10 personnel? Why would I limit myself to 3 protections, maybe 2? Why would I limit myself here when I've got these guys all day long? I've got these guys that are chess pieces and not checker pieces. Why would I limit myself? Why wouldn't you expand everything you could possibly do and make it more difficult to defend your great talent as opposed to streamlining it like the air raid does and saying this is what we're going to do and minimizing what your talent could do? It doesn't make sense to me. That's why I think that and the fact that Kyler Murray was better, the more balanced they were in personnel groups, the more balanced they were in play call, he was better. That in the red zone. I've talked about this before. You need to be able to run the ball and run the ball well in the red zone. You can't just say, okay, offensive line, now we're going to turn on the switch because we're in the red zone. Come off the ball with a dark heart and painted face. You just can't say that.
It's the Mike D'Antoni of let's not practice defense and then suddenly get mad that we can't play defense in the playoffs.
Ding, 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 ding. Right on, Douglas. You got to let the bit. You got to let the butt guts eat, man. You got to let them eat. And this is the difference. This is what has happened. I think Cliff has come to a still point moment in his coaching career where he realized, listen, I've got to be vast. I've got to be varied because this is the National Football League. And if you're not vast, if you're not varied, you're predictable. And anytime an offense or defense becomes predictable, You're beatable.
We're not at training camp. It just feels so weird. It's July 29th. I'm doing a radio show from my house.
Yes, I know.
Every year.
And guess what? You know, who knows?
Who knows if we're ever going to do a practice for training camp?
I'm telling you.
Or do a show. It's strange.
Please, Lord.
Strange. Coming up next, Torrey Lovello. Are we seeing a coronavirus world manager of a 60-game season, or are we seeing a changed man? Torrey Lovello is managing differently. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Matt Lehman of Arizona Sports just sent out an interesting tweet, Wolf. Have you ever heard of a franchise called the Buffalo Sabres?
Yes, I have.
That's it.
Rene Robert, Rick Martin, Gilbert Pateau.
The team Wolf grew up watching. They were in Arizona to have a regular season game, and that was on leap year of this year.
I see.
So Matt Lehman sent out a picture of the Sabres warming up against the Coyotes, and then his tweet said, 5 months ago today, the last time the Coyotes had a home game.
Oh.
5 months.
Wow.
And the Coyotes have a scrimmage tomorrow against Vegas, and then they get underway against Nashville. So we got a playoff team here in town. So
playoffs.
But I just couldn't believe it. I mean, we all know how long it's been, but just to see that quote, it's been 5 months since the Coyotes had a home game.
Yes. Monty
that
Williams
was shocking.
In his first year, ladies and gentlemen.
This is, if anybody's been paying attention to this, I find this amazing, and I embrace it, I love it, and I wonder if any of it is going to continue or ever show its face again in the history, or the future, I should say, of Torrey Lovello as manager of the Diamondbacks. D-backs a 4-1 winner yesterday. And think about the progression of Torrey Lovello this year. Lose game one. And what's his attitude? You know, it's basically relax.
It's the first week of the season.
You know? But then, game two, they lose. And he comes out and says, hey, the Padres have seen 100 more pitches than we have. 100. Clearly, he was annoyed at the lack of execution.
Yeah.
Game three, he gets ejected. He gets ejected. He's that angry and fired up already. In three games, and then going into game five of the season, he already makes a major lineup change and moves Cole Calhoun to the second spot in the order and drops David Peralta, who did have a nice RBI single in San Diego, but for the most part had not only bad production, but just simply terrible at bats in San Diego. And he drops them all the way to six. That is not the regular season Torrey Lovello at all. And yesterday, he was asked by Burns and Gambo in his exclusive interview, simply, how long before you pull a slumping player? I don't know if they knew he had already decided he was going to make a change.
It's nothing I've ever been associated with, right? I try to practice patience and believe in the players and know with a 162-game schedule that we're going to have time to make up for it. But in a 60-game schedule, it's a mix and match, and who knows what the program is, but I'm trying to figure that out as soon as possible. And I kind of walk through the at-bats and watch how they're getting through the at-bats. Are they patient? Are they swinging at strikes? Are they just missing pitches? Are they going out of the zone?
He's basically looking at-bat to make decisions.
Man,
I love this.
That is a big, big deal right there and a great observation because, honestly, you think about it. I have a tendency, Basin audience, to look at the player, of course, right? As a former player myself, I have a tendency of looking at the player and saying, oh, my goodness, how are you going to justify this? How are you going to deal with this, right? How are you going to go about your business in your own mind when you go from 162 games to 60? How does that change your approach game in and game out, whether you're in the field or whether you're actually at the dish? How does it change your approach? That's what I wonder. Well, you know what? Honestly, how do you change managing something you've done your entire life? You look at Torrey Lovello coming up through the ranks, right, and coaching and managing whatever it may be at different levels, and now all of a sudden you're in the bigs. And how does it change what you've always done? It must change it drastically, the way that he's thinking right now. For him to have patience and want to show a player that he's got confidence in him, He can't do that. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have that luxury, and it must make Torrey Lovello feel really, really strange.
Yeah. I'm interested in, because there's two ways to look at this, and they're both totally true. You could look at it and say,
it's the first week of the season.
We've played five games, okay? We've played five games. Everybody calm down. Or you can look at it and say, it's July 29th, and we were tied for first place last week, and we're already two games out. I mean, as ridiculous as that sounds, imagine in a normal season, mm-hmm. how would you feel if you go into San Diego tied for first place and you come out of San Diego down three games in the standings?
Yes.
You know, it's going to be, hey, let's go here. And he's obviously managing like that. But then he said something else to Burns and Gambo Wolf, which was a little, I think his math is off, a little opposite.
I feel like today is the most important day that we got to go out and execute our game plan and get the job done. That's what I'm going to focus on, and that's what I've been talking about. I can't look at the big picture when I'm talking to these guys because they don't see that. But you know, personally speaking, when I'm thinking about the big picture, I got to make sure that we're playing good baseball. And then when we are, you know, we'll pile up 10 games and we're going to be 6-4, 7-3. And you know, that's how I'm going to break it down. So I'm probably looking in 10 game segments before I make any real big decisions. And I know I can only do that six times, so that might shorten. But that's been my starting point.
What's your problem with that, Doug?
I'm trying to interpret it. I think what he means when he says big picture, I bet he's thinking normally in a 162-game season, my big picture is a month. You know, the big picture is every month. There are 6 months in a year of the baseball season, and if I'm going to make a dramatic change, let me see what happens at the end of April. And then I might make a dramatic change. And now my big picture thinking of a month is down to 10 games. And I kind of understand that, but I think it should be even shorter. I think he just proved that by making the move with – that's a big deal to move up Cole Calhoun already and make that big of a change. I like not 10 games. I like 5 or 6 games as the big picture.
Yes. No, I'm with you on that right there. I think probably that's where he's headed, mm-hmm. and I think he even said that. He said, you know, I'm looking at 10-game blocks for the most part, and I know only got 6 of them, and that may shorten. I think he's probably expecting it to shorten at some point in time, right? But I just thought yesterday was a still point moment for the Diamondbacks early in this season. This is, you know me, Doug Lease. We have our yearly argument. It's going to happen over. Oh, and they're 2-5.
It's the first week of the season.
It's the first week of the season, and you're going to be out of your mind because you don't like what you're seeing, or maybe. You know, and I'm going to be like, Doug Lease, calm down. And you know how I am on this stuff. These guys are going to come around. It's 162 games. It's just not
You said
different.
That at the end of every May.
Exactly right. And it's not different. It is so absolutely foreign to all of us that have followed the Diamondbacks. Can you imagine what it's like to the guys that are actually doing it? How foreign it is, the concept of saying, I'm sorry, I just don't have time with you, David, you know, Peralta.
It's not just how foreign it is, it's how personal. It's one thing to say going into this season, I understand, Skip. And it's another thing for a guy like David. Think about how a player takes this. When David Peralta was told he's being dropped to sixth, there's a lot of players, and I'm not saying David did it, but there's a lot of players that will immediately file that away as you lost faith in me in only 4 games.
Yeah.
And so you can say, yes, I understand until it happens to you. And then it's happened to you. And you're thinking, look, Skip, I'm going to get it. I'll get it figured out. And no, I'm getting more at-bats for Cole Calhoun. You've lost at-bats. How do you get paid in baseball? Granted, Peralta got his pay in the offseason. But how do you get paid by at-bats and then doing them productively? Boom. You've just lost at-bats. The thing you have to tell the player after you make one of these moves is, I can put you back just as quickly as I dropped you. Just go out there and produce, and you're right back there. And if you didn't hear this, think about what Matt Hergis has been saying. He's the new pitching coach. And this is after the game in San Diego, going into yesterday's game. So he has no idea how good Merrill Kelly is going to be. But he's talking about the series –
But the 27 walks definitely has been the problem. The three ball counts have been way high, and just overall pitching away from the bat. That's been the issue.
I love where he's going in this. Look at Nick Ahmed. Look at Ketel Marte. And even though you'd like to see Escobar hit a little better, he's a good defensive third baseman. And now that Christian Walker's back at first, you've got an infield defense that will stop the ball. Make them hit it. Let them hit the ball. And I love what Matt Hedges was scolding about. And that's what's so exciting, Wolf, because guess what Merrill Kelly did? Exactly what Matt Hedges has been preaching.
Yes, no doubt about it, man. Cole Calhoun, by the way. I love watching this guy play.
I do, too.
I am all
the most productive 0 for 5 you could possibly have.
I'm all over Cole Calhoun right now. Can a brother get in at bat?
I like what he brings to the table. 1 o'clock today, taking on the Texas Rangers, trying to get back to .500. Mad Bum against Lance Lynn. Mad Bum really good for about 5 innings, I think it was, and then had a blow up in the 6th to end up with a .476 ERA. Lance Lynn took on the Rockies' powerful offense, even though it was not in Colorado, and gave up 0 runs in 6 innings pitched, and his whip after 1 start is only a 1, so he takes the mound as the ace for the Rangers today before the Diamondbacks come home to take on the Dodgers at Chase Field for a 4-game series, which begins tomorrow night. That game today at 1 will be on ESPN 620 AM if you want to listen later on this afternoon. Coming up next, we now know where Chandler Jones ranks in the NFL Top 100. But so far through 90 players, we haven't seen Pat P. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Ladies and gentlemen, yeehaw! It's time to get up and get going on a Quasimodo Wednesday. The Doug and Wolf Show, Savages in the Morning, broadcasting on a Quasimodo Wednesday. We say good morning to you, my brothers.
Paul, can you give me an update in throughout the dark times when you brought sobriety to the friendship? Did you ever hear a yeehaw?
Well, Wolf did have the urban cowboy phase of the dark days, so there was that portion. There were different portions. There was the hairband where he professed earlier in the show his obsession with Motley Crue and other spandex bands. There was that, and then there was the urban cowboy and ride the mechanical bull phase. We had that, and so there's different things there. You know, he tried to replace covering a kickoff and the physicality of football with a mechanical bull.
How did that go, Wolf? How did the bull go?
He's so full of it right now, okay? It's even worse than the bottle over there.
I've ridden the mechanical bull. I lasted 7 seconds.
I got the horses in the back. Horse tack is attached. Hat is matte black. I got the boots is black to match.
That's right.
It was just good to hear Wolf bring some energy. It took half the week, 7:46 a.m. on a Wednesday, but finally some energy.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
If anybody wants advice, I asked the bartender, and he goes, "Dude, I'm not helping." And I said, "Listen, I got a bunch of people here. I got to figure this out." And he goes, "All right, do the opposite." I said, "What?" He goes, "Bull comes up, then you go down. Bull goes down, you go up."
Yeah.
I said, "Oh, all right."
You were George Costanza.
I was doing pretty well until I smiled. And then as soon as I smiled, the guy in charge of the bull said, "Oh, you think you got this?" And then he made it go left-right, and I didn't have any plan for left-right. I was fine up-down.
Yeah.
When it went left-right very quickly, I was on the mat. I was done.
Good distance? Did you get thrown a good distance? You know, up against the rail maybe?
No, not up against Reginald. No. Just kind of more of a plop. Mm. This is something that there's two names nationally, and I'm even going national here on the NFL Top 100, that I am shocked that we haven't seen yet.
Right.
And I think we're going to see one in the top 10, and we're not going to see the other. One of the names I'm shocked that we haven't seen yet is Matt Ryan, meaning I think Matt Ryan's going to be put in the top 10. And I think Matt Ryan's really good. I think he's a top 25 player maybe, but does anybody look at Matt Ryan and say that's a top 10 player in the entire NFL? He's better than Drew Brees, better than Tom Brady, better than Aaron Rodgers?
No. Drew Brees!
No.
No. And I think we're going to have, we might have four quarterbacks coming up in the top 10. Pat Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, and Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan, really?
That's shocking. Mm. And the other name that I can't believe we haven't seen yet, and I don't think there's any chance we are going to see it, is Patrick Peterson. I understand Pat P being dropped into the 70s, dropped into the 90s. I mean, really dropped down because of the positive test for a some kind of steroid, and then at the same time, how slow his season started last year. But what kind of Pat P are we going to get in 2020 when Richard Sherman is ranked 29th and he's not in the rankings at all?
Okay, so this just in, I thought it was out there, I just found it, at NFL Media last night tweeted out the top 10 players in alphabetical order. We're going to find out later today
what numerical
order they're in. But here's your top 10 in alphabetical order. Aaron Donald, Stephon Gilmore, Derrick Henry, DeAndre Hopkins, Lamar Jackson, George Kittle, Patrick Mahomes, Christian McCaffrey, Michael Thomas, Russell Wilson. Those
oh
are the
gosh.
10 left.
That means Matt Ryan didn't even make the top 100?
No. He did not. Matt Ryan did not.
I promise. I've been looking up and down the quarterback list. You're telling me Jimmy G is 43rd, Kirk Cousins is 58, Josh Allen is 87, and Matt Ryan's not a top 100 player?
Yeah.
What?
Well, to this your point right there,
this isn't as bad as
he was going to be a top 10 player.
Listen, either way, I knew I was going to be outraged either way. I was like, wait, Matt Ryan, it's ridiculous that he's not top 100, and it's ridiculous that he's top 10.
Yes.
Now to find out he doesn't even make it, and yet you've got Jimmy G and Josh Allen on the list?
Hey, here's what I know right
Who
now.
Who are these people?
Yes. Chandler Jones is 15. Yeah, baby.
At least I got that right.
What do you think of that, Paulie? Were you jacked up for Chandler on that one, that he was number 15?
It's about where I thought he'd end up, somewhere around there, yeah. So, you know, he can't use that as motivation anymore. But I not that we're going to be in the locker room anytime soon, but
right.
I cannot tell you how many times the top 100 question got asked, not just when he came back from last summer and last training camp. It got asked in September. It got asked at Halloween. It got asked in Thanksgiving. It's like the media had nothing else to ask. They would always come back to the top 100 questions. Like, no, make it stop. So thankfully, he's ranked number 15. And on behalf of all of my media cohorts, now, you know what? Cease and desist with the stinking "you're being ignored" question.
Hey, listen, right now, you know what? I am so happy for Chandler Jones, ladies and gentlemen. He's one of the few men I've ever known that has worked harder and got better after he got paid. Mm. You just don't see this, my brothers. That says so much about this dude. And this confirmation and affirmation from his peers will only drive him to be even better. That's the great thing about it.
This is Cliff Kingsbury yesterday.
Chandler Jones is always going to be
top 100 excitement over. I'm interested in Cliff Kingsbury talking about it. He talked about Fitz already. And the thing that gets to me is you mentioned it, Paul, about how many times it was brought up to Chandler Jones. But I think Chandler Jones significantly got a laugh out of it. I think Chandler Jones is the type of person that he was going to be who he was whether he got on that list or not. Patrick Peterson, for better or worse, is totally driven by stuff like this. I mean, how many times did we hear about the Richard Sherman contract about 6 years ago and how we talked about him being the best corner in the league and yet all the hype about Richard Sherman? Now, Richard Sherman coming off of the torn Achilles, coming off of going to a different team, goes into the top 30 as ranked by the players, and the players in the NFL don't think Patrick Peterson's a top 100 player. I'm not arguing whether he should be. I have no problem that he was left off the list. He didn't earn it last year. I would probably have voted him 95, 90, somewhere in there, but okay, fine, he didn't make it. But you know who does care? Patrick Peterson.
Well, and if you are basing on last year, then guess what? He doesn't deserve to be in the top 100.
Yeah.
But if you're hitting zoom out and you're trying to assess over the last 5 years or so, who's a top 100 player, then Patrick Peterson most definitely and obviously belongs. When he used to go back and he'd go back and forth with Richard Sherman, he was correct. You know, Richard Sherman didn't do what Patrick Peterson did. Richard Sherman would play a lot of zone and he'd play a lot of just the left side of the defense. Whereas Patrick Peterson would travel and shadow a team's number one receiver for an entire game. That's not what Richard Sherman did. It was a different job description for Richard Sherman versus Patrick Peterson when you were trying to assess who's the best corner in the game. And so with that in mind, yeah, he's going to use it as motivation. There's no doubt that Patrick Peterson is aware of what's going on around the rest of the league. Absolutely.
You know, I look at this right now, guys. This should be the final insult to Pat P, and he has nobody to point a finger at but himself and his peers. Now, listen, are the players the bastion of integrity, always voting thoughtfully and sincerely?
Chandler Jones last year, Matt Ryan this year.
But this is going to get Pat P's attention. You know that it's going to, and focus him in a way that should answer every question going into 2020. What do you have left, Patrick? It's time to show the league what you got left. He's going into a contract year. He's got Robert Alford on the other side of him. People are whispering that he's lost it. He's coming off the worst season he's had in a long time. He's got a scheme that is going to suit his strengths. And now he's got the proverbial cherry on top of this disrespected, sloppy Sunday. Your peers don't think you're in the top 100, Pat.
Cliff, how do you feel about Patrick Peterson this year?
I'm excited for Pat. Last year was tough. We all know that. Everybody expected him to come back in after sitting out for 2 months and be Superman. And it took him, you know, a few games to get his legs back underneath him. By that last month, he was playing at that high level we all expect from him. So to have this whole offseason to train, I know he's highly motivated. He's been one of the best DBs in the history of the league when you look at what he's accomplished. So couldn't be more thrilled for him and to get out there and see what he looks like this fall.
You know, I look at the Cardinals' schedule, I'm trying to figure out, okay, who is the first legit top marquee receiver that he's going to travel with? Because the Niners announced in the last 24 hours, as they reported to camp, Deebo Samuel is most likely to miss some time early in the season.
Yeah.
So don't count on that. Doug, I mean, do your Redskins truly have a number one receiver?
No. McLaurin's a nice young player, but he might develop into a number one at some point. He's a hardworking kid, but no, he's not a good enough threat to say, I got to travel with him.
And then you have Lions, Panthers, and Jets before you get to the Cowboys and Amari Cooper. So I'm curious, you know, Pat P, he lives for those one-on-one matchups against the Julio Joneses of the world. So there's not a lot of that, at least early in the season, to truly challenge him.
I'll go bigger with Patrick Peterson. We've had him on the show before, Paul. I know you've talked to him millions of times. And I've asked him the famous question that's almost a prerequisite at the Combine. If you had to choose Super Bowl or Hall of Fame, Super Bowl ring or Hall of Fame, what would you want? And some people argue a team player is always going to say Super Bowl. That's the galvanizing force behind why you play. And other people look at it and say, all I can do is the best I can do. And if I go into the Hall of Fame, that means you recognized me and I did everything I could to help the team win. He is one that chose Hall of Fame. He cares. If he had to choose, he has said specifically, I would rather have a gold jacket and a ring because it means I'm looked at as one of the greatest of all time. I'll draw a line in the sand this year. He's probably done enough to be considered for the Hall of Fame. And it's easy to say if you keep going, you're in. But if he starts a downfall beginning from last year, I don't think he makes it. He might, but I don't think he does. So here is you want motivation for Patrick Peterson, a guy that wants to be in the Hall of Fame. The real part of the Hall of Fame is the difficulties he faces right now to get in.
Let me just say this quickly. If not now, when? That's what it comes down to with Patrick Peterson right now. With all the motivation Pat P has in this one-year scenario, Pat P is either going to get an extension from the Arizona Cardinals because he's going to go out and he's going to have an unbelievable year, which I expect him to do, or he's going to scare off a lot of NFL teams.
Oh, you're right. You're right. We're talking contract and Hall of Fame. Coming up next, the D-backs got exactly what they needed last night. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.